Welcome to RTFC, the only podcast that reminds you to read the fucking card. I'm Tony, and as always, I'm joined with Kirk and Phil.
What's up?
What's going on, everybody? How are you?
Thank you for listening to episode 2, Works in Progress. We're going to jump right in and start talking about what you may or may not have seen at the pre-release event that just took place. I was not lucky enough to be a part of such a magnificent occasion. However, I believe both Phil and Kirk had quite an experience to talk about, so I'm going to pass it on to them as I listen intently.
Well, I think we should hear Kirk's pre-release experience before mine, because his was a lot more exciting than mine, because I got my ass whooped. Kirk, let me know how it went for you.
I had a really good pool. I had a lot of interesting cards, including the Planeswalker we talked about last week, Karn. And I also had a Molten Steel Dragon. I was pretty lucky to have gotten both. And Eventzer. And I found room for all three. The cards themselves were pretty powerful, including Karn, which I was on the fence about. And I really do think that after some more playing with him, especially in Limited, that he is the real deal. I didn't manage to place in the pre-release. I went 3-2. Which is mediocre, but for me, you know, I was like, yay. And that was pretty much it.
We went 3-2 at a pre-release, but this wasn't a normal-sized pre-release. There wasn't like 12 or 15 people there. How many people were here?
56.
Yeah,
56-person pre-release.
And some were turned down.
So basically, you went to a very low-casted PTQ for the argument of this pre-release. Yeah, it was you turned people down, you said?
Yes.
Yeah, well, the store we were at could only hold, like, 54 people. We wound up squeezing two more in. And there was more people trying to get in, but we just couldn't have the space for them.
Yeah, I see. Oh, well, I mean, at least you made your money back from the draft, right?
Oh, yeah, no, definitely.
Oh, sealed.
I am very happy that I came in 12th. As mediocre as it is, I was content with it.
If they did deck lists for women, I'm sure your name would show up.
Our one buddy, Ashok, who wound up winning it, happened to have a Phyrexian Obliterator and a foil Phyrexian Obliterator in his pool, which was kind of retarded.
And his third Phyrexian Obliterator was the Phyrexian Metamorph.
Oh, yeah, and he had the Phyrexian Metamorph, too. So he was run sealed deck, 3 Phyrexian Obliterators, which is pretty messed up. I mean, I wasn't lucky enough to get it. I mean, I pulled a lot of, like, spot removal and stuff. I was in black-white. I had some decent stuff in there, but I just couldn't get it. Like, first round went against Gerard Fabiano, who had a disgusting deck. And then after that, like, I beat, like, 2 other guys that didn't really have a whole lot going on. I had to deal with a Geth. I killed him pretty easily. And then I wound up going against one buddy, Aaron, who dropped an Exclusion Ritual on my Chancellor of the Annex. And then I dropped another bomb I have. I don't really remember what it was. It's kind of forgetful bomb. But I played that, and then he dropped a Glimmer Point Stag, blinking the Exclusion Ritual and bringing back in to get rid of another bomb. And they did it again with his second Glimmer Point Stag, which was ridiculous.
And that's living the dream right there.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to kill one of his Glimmer Point Stags, and then he wound up remembering and falling it back up and got rid of something else. So I was just like, wow, screw this. And that's why I kind of got angry and called it quits.
Unfortunately, it is very competitive in New Jersey right now. It always has been for Magic, and it always will be.
Yeah, because we have nothing better. Well, here's actually a question I had. The format of the pre-release you went to was 3 packs of
Scars
of Mirrodin and 3 packs of New Phyrexia.
Correct.
Is that the standard? Is that what
that's
Wizards
the sealed standard?
Out?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
See, that's kind of weird for me. And I mean, I understand obviously.
Well, the thing I don't like about that is without the Mirrodin Besiege in there for sealed, Infect's kind of hard to pull
exactly.
off because that was what their biggest draw. Like. There's a lot of people that are running Infect, but like
you can't. It's subpar Infect.
It's subpar. You can't. You don't get all. You don't get the Rotwolf. You don't get the Blight Widow. Like stuff like that.
Like you're basically cut out of good green Infect for that point. Mm-hmm. Now I know Draft is 1-1-1.
Yes.
The reason I know that is because Wizards put out these special draft packs, which is 36 packs, 1 row of Scars, 1 row of Besiege, 1 row of.
Oh Frenzy. Really?
Yeah, you can buy those. Cool. Star City Games has them. I think the distributors are selling them. But that's pretty good, because now it's one box for a 12-man draft. You know, you don't have to crack open actual cell products, and then you can use one as a prize support. It's a really nice way. Plus, you can like you and your friends can all grab one and have like a personal draft. So that's pretty good. I'm not, like I said, I'm not very big into limited. I only do it when I have to, and I'm especially not big into Scars of Mirrodin limited.
Yeah, I hear you. It's understandable.
But I mean, I almost can't avoid drafting or playing in sealed tournaments on a release event. It kind of has to happen.
Yeah, it's almost like a tradition.
It's like in addition to being able to pull stuff that's decent, at least in the sealed, you're paying $25. If it was, you have a chance to get some decent stuff. Plus, you can always pull like a Mox Opal now, or you can pull, I guess, Koth.
Koth is still $20.
Sword of Body and Mind.
Sword of Body and Mind. That's like $20. No, it's still $20. All the swords. Yeah, all the swords are still really.
Wow,
really
I thought good. That was down to like maybe $12.
No,
no. If you remember, you actually ripped one and a half, though.
Actually, I ripped one into four pieces.
Oh, okay. We are still on the hunt for those four pieces.
Yeah. No, we have one of them.
I have one of them. Ian has one. Ramis has one. And the other one's MIA.
Yeah.
So.
It's alright. We can always, you know, not deal with it ever again. Sword of Body and Mind's kind of dead. Because I think this is the perfect segue to go right into discussion about the meta. After.
You mean Cobblade?
Well, after the release, as we said in the last podcast, we promised we would talk a little bit about the meta, about decks you're going to play, decks you should be playing, decks you're going to see all the time.
And cards you should be playing.
And cards you should be playing.
Like Spellskite.
As usual. We'll get to that. Now, it's been a week. I've actually spent this week testing new formats, new builds, new stuff, completely new rogue decks that I think just might make the cut. And we're going to talk a little bit about them, but we're going to start by talking about Cobblade and any variation of it. Cobblade, Darkblade,
Sparkblade.
No, Sparkblade's not good. There's no reason for cutting Sparkmage anymore because you don't need it in the mirror.
Okay.
Well,
if I remember correctly, Sparkblade placed recently at something.
We're talking about the shift.
Well, yeah, once the shift happened, I mean,
Rug placed recently, too, and yeah, that's...
Well, Rug's kind of dead and buried. I know that you're sad to see that go.
Yep, that was my bread and butter
for a while. But you got Pyro Twin or whatever you're working on now, yeah. So
Cobblade, let's just get around there. You should be mostly familiar about it, but it takes advantage of the Stoneforge Mystic package with Squadron Hawks. Late builds have been running, like, one Viridian Longbow and then two sort of Feast and Famines. It's, like, perfect for control aspects. And the reason it's been threatening is because after every expansion, it's become less and less of a control deck and more of an aggressive deck that can go to control.
Yeah.
With these new cards that are coming out, specifically, I believe, the three cards that are going to immediately make a big deal to the deck.
Sword of War and Peace.
Sword of War and Peace.
Batterskull. Freaking Batterskull.
Batterskull and Spellskite.
Spellskite. Well, Spellskite should go, like, everywhere.
Yes.
He's looking pretty beefy right about now.
You should be running Spellskites and Surgical Extractions in every deck, whatever color you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you're gonna see a little bit of a change in the way the deck's going on. Like the whole reason for Viridian Staff, was it? Or Viridian Longbow?
Silvok
Lifestaff. Whatever, I don't know. Whatever.
Good job.
Those are draft cards. Yeah. The whole reason for that was to give you a little bit of a stall against, like, red decks. You don't need that anymore, because now if your Stoneforge Mystic actually survives, then you're getting a 4-4 lifelink vigilance that's going to block the Goblin Guide, and then even if you kill, if they're like, oh, Searing Blaze, I'm like, cool, I still have a...
4-4.
Yeah, like, even if you kill the token, the equipment is still going to stay, so...
Why don't we go into more depth about this card, Batterskull?
Well, we did in the last day.
Yeah, so what exactly do you think they're going to run one copy of it, or just one?
Just one.
I think you just need one.
There's no reason for it, because it shouldn't be getting destroyed. The good players are going to know that tapping out in the wrong kind of matchups is going to have it get, you know, crushed, or
yeah.
Nature's Claimed, or whatever shit cards might destroy it. But in the other aspect, it's something that has to be dealt with. And then they're still going to have Sword of Feast and Famine, and they're still going to have the new sword, the Sword of War and Peace. And that's going to be in the main now, because it's just brutal. The ability that the sword deals damage, and they're going to gain life back,
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, and protection from... it's basically... Stoneforge Mystic is now, it's going to hit, $30. I assure you, Stoneforge Mystic is going to be,
especially
$30.
With World Wake being out of print and all, too.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder to get them.
Yeah. It's too good. I'm happy. I got a playset for $5 each of really broke down, beaten versions of it. Oh. But I hear that sleeves are really good when you play messed up cards. So I have my regular playset. I have this additional playset. I just got my playset of Splinter Twins. But Callblade, let's take it down. And any version of Callblade. There's the Esper Callblade version, which the only real difference is they run, instead of the colonnades, they're running the unblockable, creeping tar pit.
They're running discard spells such as Inquisition of Kozilek.
They're just running Inquisition. They're running Inquisition and Doomblade. That's the only thing that they've had. And then the same deck, they don't run Day of Judgments. We skipped over something. Well, no, let's keep going on that. So you have that, Inquisition is just, there's really nothing you can, if you turn one in Inquisition, I assure you, you're going to win on the deal. And that's not even factoring in if you're going to sideboard two or three surgical extractions in case you're getting rid of something and you definitely need to get rid of it. When it first came out, when I first read about surgical extraction, I'm like, wow, that's great. You can turn one on Inquisition and then surgically extract that out of the deck. I'm like, yeah, but really, how many times do you really want to do that? A lot of times, removing... you don't want to do it for, mana leaks, because, yeah, then they'll be out of counters, but you've also thinned their deck properly. You do want to do that for, kill cons. If you happen to get a Jace out of there...
Off the Duress or Spies.
You're also putting yourself at a card disadvantage, too.
Yeah, you're... Well,
yeah,
yes,
but also
yes.
Remember, when you surgical extract some, especially if it's relevant, that's one less threat you have to deal with, so I actually think it's a pretty fair
It's a good play, it's just not the best play. And that's why I think Darkblade's got a really good matchup. But I personally, and this is obviously the reason I'm not playing Rug anymore, I don't think you can pull off three-color decks. It's Tech Edge is now... It's a $2... What is it, Uncommon?
Yeah,
it's a $2 Uncommon right now because it's so good. It's destructive. It will shut down... It'll make you pay. Unless you're running a Cobra for a fix and they're not running ways to remove the Cobra, Tech Edge is going to end your day. A little bit more on Callblade, the blue-white build. Spellskite, in particular. Spellskite, I assure you, Spellskite is, I think it's priced at $10 right now. It will go up.
It's going to go up.
Originally, I was like, yeah, it's cute. It's a sideboard card. No, it's not. It replaces Day of Judgment for the most part in mainboard
target removal off
because
your back,
you really don't need Day of Judgment when you don't really don't need board wipes. It just becomes irrelevant because you're going to be playing such a race deck that even a Spellskite equipped with a sword's a big deal. Even and on top of it, they can't instant speed remove anything if you have a Spellskite out. They can't swords to plow. We actually talked about that. The only thing they can't stop is Go for the Throat. So, if you're playing Darkblade, don't run Doomblade, run Go for the Throat. It seems like the number of artifacts you're going to have to deal with are only relevant in, one deck or two right now. But, you're going to want to run, two or three Spellskites. Get your playset early. Don't be trading them away if you got them already. Hold on to them. A common problem that people get, especially when the last set comes out, is people worry so much about completing their deck now that they don't realize that the cards they have in New Phyrexia are going to be around for another year. Another year, period. I made the mistake with Rise of the Eldrazi. I started getting rid of cards like Splinter Twin.
Splinter Twin shot from $0.30 to $12.
I sold my Gideons at $12. I was like, whatever, he's only $12. I guess I'll get him back if I need him.
And now he's at, 30?
He's 30 right now. So, I made that mistake. I'm never making that mistake again. When the last set comes out, I'm buying a case because I happen to have the money laying around. I'm going to hold on to all those cards. The only trade I'll make is for other cards that are going to be around forever. We don't know what Innistrad's going to bring. We don't even have an idea.
We don't even know what M12 is going to bring.
Yeah, but,
Well, look at how much M11 changed the game when M11 dropped.
Yeah.
With the Titan cycle and everything like that. Baneslayer coming back for another run.
like...
Yeah, but M11 just kind of fit into archetypes. Like, M11 fixed things that were there, and it enabled a couple... It enabled two decks. M11 enabled...
Valakut
and Eldrazi Green off the bat, and then the other deck, the other sets are what enabled stuff like Rug and... Rug's always been around, but it's not... I'm not really worried about M12. I honestly believe they're going to reprint the Titans just because no one had anything bad to say about them. There was never a bad situation. And Valakut's gone when Valakut's cycle's out, so that's really not a big deal.
But also, the way I'm thinking against them getting reprinted is... In M11, they had your 5 Titans, Premier Mythics, you had the 5 Planeswalkers, you had Baneslayer.
Mm-hmm.
That's 11 Mythic slots already filled.
Yeah.
They like keeping the set like half and half, half new, half old, so I think we're going to be losing the Titan cycle.
What makes you think that... they're not unfair cards.
No, I never said that.
No.
But I just think they had their time. They were good. There's nothing wrong with them. But I'm thinking they might want to try a different Mythic cycle to go into this to sell boxes
and
stuff like that.
Yeah, but if we know anything about Wizards, is that they're lazy. Unless they started planning on new...
They put in the Titans in M11, why? To sell boxes, that was the main thing.
We're not getting Baneslayer anymore, so...
Well, they never confirmed she was out either.
Yeah, they did.
They said in the last set that Baneslayer or Lightning Bolt they were thinking of giving the axe to, but they both made it back in.
Whatever, Baneslayer's gonna go down to $5, and I still won't care. I think that what they should do is reprint the lands. I'm tired of the comes into play if you have one. I kinda want Pain Lands back, or...
I want Pain Lands back. Really.
I don't know. I wouldn't mind Pain Lands. I wouldn't mind Filter Lands, but
I would love Filter Lands, but that's besides the point.
Got to go back to talking about the Blade decks. You're gonna have to get ready for them. You're gonna have to prepare. If you're gonna play them, this is what you should be worried about. If you're gonna play against them, this is what you should have. You have, and I mean absolutely
board
positively, not so much board wipes, but not really, because they're never really gonna have more than two creatures out. The deck can play around everything. It's gonna
have
threats
are gonna be whatever has a sword on it and Jace. That's pretty much it. And then when they get to Gideon,
You're gonna need to find ways to deal with the Spellskite if it hits. You're gonna need to find ways to deal with the sword. Granted, you're gonna be fine on casting stuff like Crush. Like you can run like Crush now if you're running in red, because Crush is gonna guarantee to kill the equipment. It's not gonna kill the Spellskite. He cannot redirect it. He's not a valid target. He can redirect Nature's Claim, and that's kind of an unfair advantage to you, because they're going to pay the 2 life, and then they're going to gain the 4.
Yeah.
So you really don't want to give them the Nature's Claim. There's a lot of weight. You're just going to have to stop. Like, now, you're just going to have to either be faster than them, or just have the answers at the right time. The deck is really, really good. If you can deal with taking the punishment that it's going to dish out, deal with it. If you can't, sorry, you're not going to quit.
I think Hand Disruption's your best bet against going into Callblade now.
What
you've got to disrupt
really
what they're setting up, what they're planning.
The deck apart is that it's card advantage machine. I mean, between Jace and Squadron Hawks in general, I mean, that's a lot of digging.
It can't mulligan poorly.
No.
You can easily mulligan out to 6, see a Hawk or a Stoneforge Mystic, and be
be
this
good.
Is fine. This
like,
is absolutely fine.
And that's why I feel like board wipes are very key, because you can't go one for one with Callblade or Darkblade or any of these Squadron Hawk based decks, because it just doesn't.
Yeah, but they're not. But that won't make a difference, because they're not going to overcommit. You're always gonna get. You're gonna get 2-for-1 on them, and then they're gonna. Remember, the deck is so good that it has a beginning and no end. Like the deck starts
once it gets going,
it's either gonna be I'm gonna play aggressively right now. Or it's going to say, okay, I'm going to play aggressively when I have 6 mana so I can use my Celestial Colonnade, or I'm going to play aggressively. The deck just waits. That's why I only run 6 counters now. It's no longer a control deck. It just has clutch counters in it. So it's like, oh, no, you can't do that, and now I'm back into the game. And it's going to dig. It's going to dig through its entire deck the entire time. It's a great deck. The only reason I don't play it is because I have a personal hatred for that deck. It kept me out of winning a Star City Game qualifier. Even though I was prepared for it, because that was the first time. It was the Edgar Flores build. It was actually a real good friend of Edgar Flores, who I played against, and he entered the Royal with my Precursor Golems. He made me look like a fool, so...
Did he Ancestral Recall?
Ancestral Recall. Yeah. But it's cool, because then I put the card that makes me Ancestral Recall in the deck, and that was alright. It's just... Callblade, if you can afford it, I advise you to run it. Try your best. If you can't afford it, you know, try to focus on running a black variant or some way to hit their hand. If you hit their hand, you're much better off than if you're trying to hit them when they cast the cards. I think Dark Blade's the better deck, with the exception of the fact that it's in three colors. I think that it has a better matchup against a lot of decks. And, I mean, the same as Blue-Black Control. I think Blue-Black Control just got stronger, too. I think Control decks are very important. I think if you can play any kind of variant of Control, you'll be doing all right.
Yeah, well, I like how, like, this set's kind of balancing out a bit more, so now we have a decent spread of combo Control and aggro, you know?
Well, we will.
Which is also going to make way for mid-range decks come back as well.
Yeah, I like to see a mid-range deck come back. So I think that's enough on Callblade right now. We'll move into the next deck that I think is going to be a Tier 1. There's going to be a lot of Tier 1 decks coming. If everyone listening, like, you're going to see, it's not going to be the same three or four decks. You're not going to see Vampires swinging in as often as they do. It's going to be a lot of Tier 1 decks. There's going to be a lot of changes. Testing is going to become very important. Because you're going to move from Callblade into what I think is going to be the second tier deck. It's going to be a blue-red combo. I'm saying blue-red combo because there's three builds. There's the one that's just Pyromancer's Ascension, which is relevant again. Yes, they don't have Time Warps or Ponders, but now they have the Free Peek, the Gataxian Probe. They have Tezzeret's Gambit, which immediately enables, if there's a Tezzeret Gambit in the graveyard, it's immediately enabling Pyromancer's Ascension before it even like hits the graveyard. And you get Pyromancer's Dig. Like, I was watching a test game against an Eldrazi Green build, and he went down to something like, I think I was playing Pyromancer Ascension, we went down to like 4 life just from Gataxian Probes and Tezzeret's Gambits and taking damage, and then he just like bolted and burst lightning them to death. And I was like, wow, alright, that's a really good way to kill somebody. Yeah, especially if you kick a burst lightning. The second you kick that burst lightning, that's 5 mana for 8 damage. Yeah.
Seems pretty good.
Yeah, and then you have the Splinter Twin combo. We've talked about it before. You understand it, I'm sure. But you can run basically the exact same build, but you can remove the Pyromancer's Ascensions. You can put in a little more Jace Mind Sculptor to get some control in there. You can run a series of other possibilities. And the entire thing is just going to make sure that your deck as it is going to get that combo out. You're going to, at some point in time, you're going to flash in Deceiver Exarch, put the Splinter Twin on it, and win them. So, and the third is the combination of the two. It's called Pyro Twin. That's what I've been working on now. It loses a lot of the draw power. And by the lot of draw power, I mean like cards like Sea Beyond and Foresee. And you lose Call to Mind.
Which is unfortunate, but I mean, the deck still looks like it can bounce back.
What you gain is stability against any kind of hoser. Like, Callblade is prepared because it's running Celestial Purge, which gets rid of both Pyromancer's Ascension and the
Splinter Twin.
So that's kind of unfortunate. So you need to be prepared by having more threats, so that their 4 isn't going to equate to your 7 or 8 things that are going to win the game for you. The other one is you're going to have to sideboard right in these decks. You're going to have to. I don't like the one that transforms. Please understand that if you're transforming from Pyromancers into this, you're going to lose a lot. You're also going to lose a lot of cards in relevant sideboard. Like, you won't be able to play cards like Flash Freeze, or you won't be able to play cards like Mental Misstep. You're just going to have to change the deck so well to make it work properly. You're not going to trick anybody into it. Like, you're not even going to be able to be like, ah, did he take out the Pyromancers? Because they're going to sideboard, and it's going to destroy whatever it was supposed to destroy. So as you're playing a red-blue build, what you have to be prepared for is sideboarding properly. You need to make sure that your sideboard answers things. If it's any kind of transformation, make sure that it transforms with enough room to answer whatever the actual threat is. If it's some kind of crazy build, like sometimes you want to see a Koth or a Jace Mind Sculptor in there to give you a little bit more of longevity and alternate threats, that's possible. You don't want to spread yourself too thin in a combo deck. And you don't want to build a combo deck that's not the perfect combo deck just so you have a decent sideboard. So it's going to take a lot of testing for that.
Kirk's been running Grixis Splinter Twin now, so how's that work?
It's been my own personal testing over the past couple days, and I found the mana base to be extremely consistent, and I also found that very rarely I had poor mulligans, and that it was very consistent. The fact that Spellskite is almost, in a way, it's almost like an insurance policy. It's really ensures a lot of my victories in testing, especially against Big Red, against Call Blade, and against other decks in the format. It's really almost the core of the deck, besides the actual combo itself, the Seaver, Exarch, and Pyromancer Ascension. And between that and the discard spells of Inquisition of Kozilek and Duress, they really don't have very many answers when you get the pieces together.
The deck is extraordinarily weak to land destruction.
Yeah, Tech Edge might give you some problems.
Tech Edge is going to be a problem, but at the same time, you're going to gain such an advantage. I feel that your turn one play is almost always a black, so that's...
Yeah, I mean, there's four of the blue-black land from Mirrodin.
Darkslid Shores.
So that will almost assure you have the option of...
To Inquisition or Preordain.
Preordain, which is why I like those lands. I think they put up with a lot of crap, but,
no,
you know.
It's...
And you also have your Scalding Tarns to get that double red, which I found in maybe about 20% of the games that I've played... It has been an issue, and I've had to dig.
So you're also running Blackleaf Cliffs, or are you running Lava Claw Reaches? How is this?
I'm running Blackleaf Cliffs and Scalding Tarns.
Okay, so how many non-dual lands are there? How many basic lands?
I'd say like about seven.
It's like seven
basics?
And that's just all targets for like Scalding Tarn and...
Pretty much.
There's no other fetch, right? You don't run... yeah.
Well, don't you have like Evolving Wilds in there?
Yeah, I run two copies of Evolving Wilds... Which actually, it hasn't gotten in my way a lot either.
Well, that's good. Just in case you
need that. Yeah, I feel that you don't really need that effect to get the land untapped more often than not, because you're playing a waiting game. You're playing a survive until. So if that's coming down on turn three, that's really not a big deal. You probably played the Spellskite, which is a great blocker on top of everything else.
Yeah. Oh, four for two.
And I almost feel that if they actually cast a Spellskite to remove the Spellskite, like if they Doomblade it. Even if they flame slash it, I kind of feel like that's the greatest thing that possibly could have happened.
That's pretty good. Because
I'm like, I didn't have to pay two life for you to do that? Cool, thanks, bro.
That's one less spell that goes towards the Seaver Exarch. And honestly, the deck has such a good matchup against Red. Besides a fully charged Galvanic Blast, there really is
Galvanic Blast. Why are you running Galvanic Blast? How many artifacts are you running?
Big Red runs it. Because they have Everflowing Chalices.
You're saying against it.
Against it.
But you run counters, whatever. They're going to hit their one Gal Blast / Flame Slash.
You're one of Spell Pierce, too.
I honestly run two Spell Pierce's main deck.
That's right. How many Mana Leaves?
Three.
That's right. Five counter spells. You don't need them when you need them.
And the fact that, as a general rule, most combo decks that I've seen in my past couple years playing Magic... This one's different in the way that it can go off on your opponent's turn. At least one half of the combo.
Yeah.
Found in testing, it kept my opponent on tilt. He was unable to play any spells because he obviously needed to keep
mana
open.
He needed an answer just in case he flashed into it.
He couldn't out-tempo me, really. I mean, and the answers after all the discard and after everything was just cleared was just... He just wasn't able to just get anything out there. And, you know, when you have your opponent in that kind of position, you can just let your Jace and Liliana Vest just take over the game for you.
Just remember, Splinter Twin... I'm not Splinter Twin. Deceiver Exarch will die to an Inquisition of Kozilek. If you are in a mirror with black, mental missteps...
mental missteps in the board, definitely.
Yeah, and here's another thing. If you are playing Splinter Twin and Deceiver Exarch... and say you make a million bajillion copies of it, please remember that just to make one more at the very end and make that tap something down, because that could be the difference of like a fog. You know?
Yeah, you don't want someone fogging you. That's
something
kind of
like, or some kind of silly, I don't know. It just, you gotta make sure that you can tap something down, get an extra advantage out of it or something. You tap a creature, I mean, I don't know.
You really can't.
I mean, you go off with that combo, you tap everything
they have.
Generally,
when you play the Splinter Twin on it, if your opponent doesn't immediately scoop, they probably have the answer. If they don't immediately scoop and they don't have the answer, it's not a mental play. They're actually just retarded. They're not actually, like, oh, maybe if I do that, he'll won't. No, no, you're gonna like, no, nothing's gonna change. This is the combo. The combo went off. Can you stop it? If you try to slow play me or trick me, it's not gonna work. You're gonna die. Don't try to trick people into thinking you can stop it.
That unfortunately happened a bit during cast time.
So we're gonna. All right. So Splinterton decks, blue red decks. We got covered right now. We're gonna move on to red, mono red. It's gonna be really quick. The big red deck that you may or may not have heard of. It places occasionally. I saw it in one of the Star City Invitational qualifiers. It's the one that runs Koth and Kodoth of Phoenix right now.
Tumble Magnet. Contagion Class.
Yeah, it's a really weird build. It just got really, really good because of Molten Steel
Dragon is ridiculous.
Volt Charge and Karn. And yes, I know it sounds weird, but Karn.
Yeah, they're
right. It's paint you a little picture right now. It's turn one, red land. Turn two,
Chalice for one.
Or Sphere of the Suns. Turn three,
Molten Steel Dragon.
Well, you can do a turn. Okay, turn three, Molten Steel Dragon. Turn three, Koth. Turn three, really, basically the rest of your deck at that point. But if we walk through the Koth, you get a turn three Koth. You're going to untap one of your lands. You can use it or you can swing with it. Usually, you're going to
swing
with
or you can bolt something.
You have more functionality with that. And then the next turn, you have a Koth. You can do like one of nine things. You can like Volt Charge, get your Koth immediately up to five, and pop your Koth. That's a one turn Koth clock right there. You can. And then proliferate your sphere, your chalice up. You can, and then you can use Koth's second ability, because he has a second ability, if anyone forgot. It's the add red for every...
He geosurges.
Yeah, geosurges. Pretty much. I mean, you might even only get three or four mana out of it, because you haven't been ramping that well. But it doesn't matter, because that's going to give you enough mana to cast your Karn. It's going to give you enough mana to cast an Inferno Titan. It's going to give you enough mana to cast a Kodatha. And by that time, you're probably going to have the ability to return it to play every... It's to play, right, when you pay it?
Yeah.
Metalcraft,
like, it comes right back into play.
Yeah. It's, like, the deck is now solid. And then if you get the Molten Steel Dragon out, you just kind of giggle for a while. Because then, if you, like, the next turn, you just, like, Koth, you have, like, two turns to not die.
Yeah.
I have to say that after extensive testing against that card... My personal experience is that the card really... Its only drawback is that it's an artifact.
Who?
Molten Steel Dragon.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the card in general is just... It's capable of just so much damage. It can do almost 18, 15, damage in one turn. Easily.
Yeah, I think that's definitely one of the sleeper cards of us.
You can even run, like, one Assault Shrove or two Assault Shroves in
just
your deck.
Just to get silly with it.
If you have the removal spell, you have to use it. You're going to get more people to scoop if you just go Assault Strobe, and he's already a 4-4. I have to pay what to make him kill you if you've done nothing? I have to pay 12 life, and you die? Is that what it is? Yeah. It's like, I pay 12 life, and you die?
Yeah, he's swinging for 20 in the air.
He's just a degenerate bastard. You have to deal with him. And then the other mono-red deck, you probably heard of it. It was called Red Deck Wins. Yeah, Red Deck Wins, the Goblin Guide. The four creatures, the four burn spells, the Koth, and then the land deck. Yeah, this is what happened to the deck, and for anyone who doesn't know. Sideboard didn't change, nothing changed. They said play to GOP, didn't make the cut anymore, and they put those Sphere of the Red Shrine, or the Red...
Oh, whatever. Shrine of the Burning
Shrine
Rage.
Shrine of the Burning Rage.
Which is awesome,
yeah, because, I mean, like, look at it, like, it's two mana to play, right?
Two mana to cast.
So it comes down to turn you play the GOP, and then every turn after that, it's getting, like, three or four counters. What are they gonna do? Like, how are they gonna get rid of it?
It just puts them on a clock. It's like you're dying in this many turns.
Yeah, it's like you get the like nothing can stop it unless there's a spell sky on the board.
It's like a fireball you can throw off at will. Like.
Yeah, right. You can run like one Red Sun Zenith, but the deck hasn't changed, so it's still hitting you really hard. But now it's getting the
I'll hit you better.
Yeah. Now it's like now any burn spell I draw is still gonna kill you. Because it's going to do that plus more next turn.
It really is the KO punch to a deck that really needed it.
Yeah,
the red... to be fair, when I was playing Rug and when I was playing basically any deck, the way I played against Boros and Red was the same. It was I saw the first game, and I might have played it, and I might have just automatically scooped. Didn't matter. Sometimes I auto-scooped when I saw a turn one Goblin Guide. I was like, you got it, man. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
This gave me a little bit of an advantage because I then got to sideboard, and whether they knew what I was playing or not, it didn't matter, because at the time I was playing Rug, and if Rug post-sideboard loses to a red deck, you messed
You're
up
doing
somewhere.
Something wrong.
You done fucked up. Like, you get Pyroclasms, you get Flash Freezes, and if you played Ratchet Bombs, you got those, but you probably didn't need to play Ratchet Bombs. You just won. Like, there was no... Like, you used Pyroclasm as a bulb. You're like, I'll kill your Goblin Guide. Eat a dick. And then you stopped Koth. So it was... Their hand exploded, and the same thing with Kuldothar Red, and then nothing came of it. Like, you still ended up crushing them. Now they at least have a way... They have an on-the-board way to shut you down.
Yeah.
I mean, you still have to be wary of stuff like Into the Royal, and... I mean, I would if I think it's like five counters and you're tapped out, I won't even draw a card if I only have two mana. I'll be like, no, I don't ever want to see that thing go off. That's kind of a little bit of a hose. But the deck is good. It's still standard. It actually just got better. You don't need the GOP swinging for seven anymore because
you have the Shrine Burning.
You have the Shrine
that's
going to hit for
seven.
You're going to
die.
Yeah, or nine or 12 or however absurd amount.
It certainly has the potential to do some devastating.
Yeah. And you still have your, you know,
I'm surprised they don't put that in the big red deck. I mean, with all the proliferating going on,
that's kind of
pop it off that much faster.
Yeah, you know what? You'll probably see like one or two in big red.
Yeah, I think people might start
just
using
because.
It.
But you know what? It doesn't seem very relevant early against them.
True, because big red's early game is just dropping artifacts. Basically, they're dropping the spheres.
Yeah, chalices. Like, their burn spells are creature control. They're like, oh, I don't want that on the board. That's it. So
I can see somebody sneaking in as like a 2-of or something. Man. Couple decks here and there, though. I don't think that's too far-fetched to a...
Mono-red variants, they got a little stronger. And the best thing is, they got stronger because of an artifact, not because of any red cards in the new set.
Yeah.
Not even Urabrask really makes the cut anymore, even though I think he's great.
I think Urabrask is really good, but I just don't think it's his time yet.
No, it will be soon. When Goblin Guide set goes out, when you don't have to
when
worry Innistrad about...
When comes out, I think
one.
He might be a go-to guy.
Yeah, and then, alright, so that's all we can talk about for red, because really nothing much has changed. But we can move
what
on
about
to...
What about that heavy metal deck?
Heavy metal. Heavy metal is actually an extraordinarily cheap, and I mean that in every sense of the word, deck. I think we talked about it a little bit last podcast, but it's been a little more clear now. It runs 12 creatures that have a pay 1 or pay 2 and a Phyrexian to get them. One is the black, it's a Phyrexian black, for 1... For a 1/1 life
Bolt
link.
Scourge, yeah.
Bolt Scourge. For a 1/1 life link in.
And flying.
The life link flyer, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't have infect or anything, right?
No, just a flying life
link. Yeah, so you have him, you have the. That guy.
Porcelain Legionnaire.
Porcelain Legionnaire. And there's a blue
Spine
or
Thopter.
Red one. I don't remember which one of those it was.
I think the Spine Thopter is one they use.
What does the Spine Thopter
it's
have?
It's a 2/1 flyer.
For a 2 and a Phyrexian blue.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly it. I would even run the 2/2, the. What's the red. Baby of the Horde, the dragon.
Oh, Immolating Soul Eater?
Yeah, I would even run him, because at that point you just don't care. And then it's the Memnites and the Ornithopters and the Steel Overseers.
Glenhawk Idol.
You've seen it before, you know what's happening.
Yeah.
Glenhawk Idol, yeah, exactly. And then you just drop a. It's a turn 3 win. Like, it really is doing nothing out of the ordinary. Like, it's just like play card, play card, play card. By turn 3, they drop the Tempered Steel and they just win. If you have, and you know what,
their turn three is
going to be a lot faster than yours. So it dies to Pyroclasm, but then again, that just sets you up for one bad deck, which you can shut up by using like core Firewalkers because you're already probably you're running mono red white. If you didn't figure that one out yet,
yeah
and you get to, and you run Stoneforge in that build.
You can. Who builds with Squadron Hawks?
Why would you run Squadron Hawks?
Those people aren't very
gets more
smart.
Creatures.
No, because not an
like
artifact.
I saw this one. The deck looked kind of cool, but he tried like merging. That and Quest into one. It looked kind of cute. It looked like it can come out with like a blowout play out of nowhere.
That sounds like an awful idea.
It sounds like if you get beaten because of it, it's time to just hang up your deck and go play Yu-Gi-Oh or something.
Yeah, no.
I thought it was cute. Like,
now what was
a funny idea?
What's that card? Dispatch.
Dispatch
gets played in that. You know why? Because it's like we said.
It's always a path.
It's always a path to exile. Like it's like yeah no. No, I'm turn 2? Yeah, no, I have Metalcraft. Shut up. Like, the deck, you don't have to worry about Day. Like, you don't have to worry about Day of Judgment. You can win with, like, a Memnite. Oh, you can run, and Signal Pass. I'm sorry, I forgot Signal Pass.
Yeah,
you can win with, like, a Memnite and 3 creatures, because your turn 1 and your turn 2 are going to be creature drops. Like, no matter what. And, like, Mox Opal and stuff. I'm sorry, I'm segueing.
Yeah, the deck runs a couple of mocks over.
You can win on turn...
two, if you're lucky.
No, you can't win. Well, four like... Memnites, a Mox Opal, one of those Skitter dudes.
Vault Scourge?
Yeah, Vault Scourge. And... no, not Vault Scourge. The 2-1 Flyer. The 2-1 Flyer.
Oh, the Spine Thop deck.
Yeah, so that's it, and the only card left in your hand is the Tempered Steel, and then you top deck the land. And you go, oh, land, Tempered Steel, I win. Because that's 3, 6, 9, 12... 13, 14, 15, 16. No, it's only 16. I'm sorry. You didn't win on turn two. You only did 16 damage.
Oh, only 16. Sorry. God forbid.
Tier, folks.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I guess
that's like living the dream, but. I mean, it's possible.
It's very possible because you have 8 free creatures.
Yeah.
8 free creatures. And then you have 4 creatures that. 8 creatures that cost 1. And. 1 Phyrexian, whatever. Well,
12
8
creatures.
And 12 creatures that cost 2.
Well, I'm trying to think.
Steel Overseer.
Steel Overseer is in there too. I forgot about
those other guys. It's a fun. You know what? It's dirt cheap. Like, Mox Opal is the cost of that deck.
Yeah.
So if you got, like. It doesn't even run 4.
It runs 3 Mox Opals.
So it's like $60 worth of Mox Opals, and then Commons and Tempered Steel. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Tempered Steel is still like $1 or 2.
I wipe my feet with Tempered Steel every day.
Yeah.
So.
That's kind of.
That's
weird.
Gross.
What's wrong with your feet?
Yeah.
What?
Alright.
I was implying it was a crappy card.
I wiped my feet with Tempered Steel.
Well, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Would you now be replacing Tempered Steel with Elesnorn?
Yes.
Okay. I see.
Yeah. You just have some divine hatred for Elesnorn.
I have a divine hatred for 7 mana creatures.
The other deck we're going to talk about is going to be Quest, only it's not Quest because Quest sucks. We're talking about Pure Steel Paladin. As I said last week, I think that if that card goes in Quest, it's because you're not smart. And I guess someone listened to this podcast, or is just smart on their own, and I'm just taking credit for it. But they're like, yeah, why would we run both? Let's just run Pure Steel Paladin. So there's a Quest deck running around. Basically, it's like the bastard son of Mono White Control, that was, and Quest White Weenie. And it runs Pure Steel Paladin, Stoneforge Mystic, Squadron Walk, blah, 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 same stuff, different day. Some Memnites, I guess. I don't know if it runs Ornithopter, I don't remember.
Just some Memnites.
Yeah, I think it's just the Memnites, because the free creature is a big deal. And I don't care if you see a build that runs this, it runs the White Exarch, whose name I will never remember.
What does the White Exarch do?
What does the White Exarch do? Are you saying that to keep this conversation going, or you actually just don't know what it does?
I actually don't know what it does.
Oh, okay. It's 2 mana for a 2/2 that says when it comes into play, you gain 2 life or your opponent loses 2 life.
Yeah.
Okay. So what it is it's an Ember Hauler that already did its job when it came into play. Like, if it, like,
it's pretty good.
It's like mono white gets a shock and a creature? Really? Yeah, it's really good. And then if you put a sword on it, really? Like, it's just, the deck is just so full of cards. Like, I think it curves out at 2. Like, I think that's it. I think it's like 2 drops and then I win. Yeah, I don't know. I like that build.
That seems like a pretty fun build.
And then you can even run days. You can mainboard days. You don't get to run. You can run Due Respect. Remember, it's the one that tap. All right, we're not
awkward
talking.
Awkward silence. Yeah. Awkward silence. Due Respect.
All right. So that's the mono white deck that you're gonna have to see. I'm not getting into details about playing against these decks because honestly, I haven't a lot
we
of these
don't
decks.
Know yet.
I haven't seen. I joked about Due Respect, but you don't know. The next deck I'm gonna talk about might actually get hurt by a card like Due Respect. I'm gonna talk about a mono green, no Eldrazi. Eldrazi still exists. I see a lot more talk about it shifting back to the way it was, which instead of being mono green, it was green white with the walls. This way, when they get their Karn out, they have almost guaranteed protection against your creatures.
And
so,
a guaranteed way to restart the game.
And then you don't have to worry about using Karn as removal. You can just be like, yeah, I'm going to restart the game with the Ulamog.
Which is pretty good.
Yeah, well, no, it's actually, I think it's better than starting with an Emrakul.
Either way, you pretty much if you start with an Eldrazi out, you're pretty much going to win. I mean, even like a Ulamog's Crusher is going to put some work in if you start
the
game with
Long
Battlefield.
Are you even going to play a land?
Because
like,
remember,
yeah.
when those guys come into exile, they can attack as soon as the game starts because they were in at the beginning of your upkeep.
Before
your upkeep.
They're basically like a ley line if we're talking about the Opalescence.
So they pretty much have haste. So,
yeah.
I mean, It's just like, okay, you're screwed.
Yeah, like I said last week, and I'm going to say it forever, if Karn pops, you lose. Like, it's not restart the game, it's you lose. Because the worst things I can start with is, like, even if I'm having you discard and I happen to get there and stall long enough to make it happen, I'm still going to crush you. I'm still going to end your day. Because I'm going to start with whatever shitty permanent you happen to pick. Even if I start with a land, I'm like, cool, I win. I now have two lands on
I can point. Honestly say that I did use his ultimate ability at the pre-release, and I started the game with a Horde Smelter Dragon.
Horde Smelter Dragon?
Yes. So you won that game, right?
I'm pretty sure I won
that game.
Did you play it? Did he? So he actually. What, Horde Smelter is a 4/4 or 5/5?
5/5.
So he didn't want to just scoop to the fact that you were going to start a game with a 5/5 that's going to attack for 5 on turn 1.
I got to give him that credit. Flies. He was persistent.
Did he have a dismember? Was that the assumption?
I don't know.
You know what? That's fine, because that would have been 9 damage on turn 1. Yeah. You're fine. Yeah, the other thing about Karn is when he restarts the game.
Who chooses whether they play or draw?
Is it a full restart, or is it just like rewind till right before you look
I'm
at your cards?
I'm assuming in the previous game before he restarted, whoever had choice has choice again.
I don't know. Maybe it's choice reason. Locked. Maybe it's choice locked.
It might be choice locked.
Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Either way, you shouldn't. If Karn restarts the game, you lose. Yeah. Like, just stop.
That is a question for a rainy day, isn't it?
It's like Jace going off. Really, you're gonna stay? Asshole.
Yeah, I've seen people win after getting Jace popped on them.
No, you haven't.
Yes, I have.
No, you haven't.
Yes, I have.
No, you haven't.
Because there was two Emrakuls in his hand. It was when Ricky was running Eldrazi Green, Ramis popped
Jace. Did he have enough to cast the Emrakul?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, then that makes sense.
That's why.
Alright, that's just mean. Anyway, so that deck, now, like I said, we're going to talk about Mono Green, no Drazi. Just a little, rogue build that might see a lot of play because it's basically a Fauna Shaman deck. Still using Vengevine. Apparently Vengevine hasn't lost value.
It's using Birthing Pod.
And it's using Birthing Pod, and it's using it the right possible way. It's actually kind of degenerate. It's just to paint a picture of how it works. It's usually like a turn one bird or a Land of War Elf, and then it's going to enable you a turn two Birthing Pod, which is going to enable you a turn 3 Mir Superior, which is that 5/6 that you can only cast with mana from creatures.
Doesn't that seem like an awful lot of work?
To get a 5/6 out?
Yeah. Vanilla, by the way.
Well, a 5/6 just swings once, and then he gets bigger.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right, it is. But then again, he might not. He might just be that guy that swings out.
Well, yeah, if they don't... If you go to the deck you're going against, if they can't really deal with
the deck, the deck doesn't require Birthing Pod, but this is just like, you know, this is just God hand status. You get the Birthing Pod out. If the Birthing Pod resolves, you're pretty sure that unless they have a way to destroy it or get rid of it, every turn you're going to see a new creature. So the Mir Superior morphs into, like, a shit ton of cards, actually. It can morph into, like...
Leatherback Baleth.
Leatherback Baleth. Viridian Corruptor to destroy an artifact. Once you get into sideboard acts, you can even run like Omnath, Locus of Mana now, because it doesn't matter if he gets removed, because you're just playing him for like one life or two mana total.
Yeah.
He's fine. Like, and then you just have so much mana for the rest of the game, it's silly. Then like the third one becomes 4, which is like Vengevine,
Obstinate Baleth, Thrawn.
Run, like, you can now be like, hi, Thrawn, and then, you know, sideboard, there's a whole bunch of different things.
It's like it's food chain.
I still think the sorcery speed really hurts the card.
No, because if it wasn't sorcery speed, it'd be stupid good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, but I think that's what it needs to be. I think that
no, because, no, the only, remember, the only reason it's sorcery speed isn't because they don't want you doing any crazy tech tricks with attacks and anything like that. It's because they really, really, really don't want you doing it on your opponent's turn.
Yeah.
Like, that's unfair, because then whatever you're Birthing Pod into is automatically going to have haste. And then you're going to go into turn...
Another thing with it, instant speed, is, like, you can block something, response to blocking declared, swap that creature out for something else.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, like... It just causes a lot of complications and silly
stuff. It just
seems
to hurt this card's value a lot.
But remember, when you're 4 going to 5, if you happen to get there, your 4 going to 5 is,
Acidic Slime.
Acidic Slime. More Acidic Slime.
Pretty much all they got for 5.
It doesn't matter, because if you get to 4 and that's what happens, like, you really shouldn't have to worry about getting to 5, because you're also still building mana. Like, this is all happening, and you're still playing other cards.
And then they got Molten Steel Dragon and
Wormcoil. Yeah, they
run,
like, Molten Steel Dragons, Wormcoil Engine, and you can still get Molten Steel out on turn four, so...
Hell, you can even throw a Primeval Titan. I mean,
actually, you can get Molten Steel out on turn, like, three, you know? Because it still runs Cobras, you're still running Fauna Shaman, you're still running Vengevine. You know, the deck just works. Like, it seems cool. It seems like it actually has a lot of problems with certain things. Like,
anyway, if you answer that Burling Pod in any way,
no, because you're still running a Fauna Shaman deck.
Yeah, you're still running the Mono Green Stomp.
The only thing that makes Burling Pod amazing is it's Fauna Shaman and gives you Enter the Battlefield.
I'd rather them blow up my Burling Pod than touch my 5/6 Mirror Superior that's beating them in the jaw. Like,
you know what? Like, if you get that, it doesn't matter though. Like, because that Mirror Superior gets to come out no matter what, because it only can be cast from mana from creatures, and you're running birds, and you're running Land of War Elves,
Lotus
and you're running
Cobras.
Lotus Cobras, which is mana from creatures. So, actually, that's really mean. You can be like turn two, a Lotus Cobra, and then turn three, you can play a fetch.
Or you can be a jerk and turn one, Fauna Shaman.
Is Mirror Superior a legend?
No.
You can like double drop with like a fetch land. Okay.
No, when I saw someone was messing with a green deck, they had that Vorniclex of Hunger dude.
Yeah.
Not him, no, the Chancellor. The green play a turn one Fauna Shaman.
Either turn one Fauna Shaman
retarded.
Or turn one Lotus Cobra is just kind of
mean.
Or if
you luck out and have two of that guy in your opening hand, you can just play your Mirror Superior on turn one, because it gives you the mana. Turn one 5/6 is pretty cool.
I don't know about that. I don't think that's mana produced by
creatures.
He
produces the mana.
No, he doesn't.
I don't know.
Let's go to the rule book, ladies and gentlemen.
We're not going to.
No, well, we're
going actually, because we don't know, we're going to assume, yes, that is how it works.
Write it in the show notes
amazing.
For next week. We'll look it up and tell
everyone
next
week. We'll get you some more information after it happens.
That would be pretty crazy, though, if that actually...
You can
imagine that turn one.
But no, the reason it's
chances,
so cool,
hey, look,
the reason you can run that shitty Chancellor is because if you turn one a Fauna Shaman, you get rid of the Chancellor. It's
exactly.
Like, bye, Chancellor. Peace out.
You served your purpose.
You're not going to need him for anything else.
No, I mean, you know what? He's still, like, doesn't he have, like, Vigilance and
he's like
what?
A 6/7 Vigilance.
Doesn't he have Vigilance and Trample? Like, those are, like, the two abilities I never thought I'd see together.
A bajillion mana, though.
Plus 7.
7.
Didn't we just have this conversation?
Yeah, but remember, you have Birthing Pods. You'll get him out.
You're running green.
And you're running Mad Ramp. Like, you'll be fine.
People
it's
can cast Emrakul, I mean, I'm sure
but
they can.
But it's not cheap, and that's the problem. If you want to run cute decks... Make sure they're a little on the cheap side, like any of the white decks that are coming out right now, with the exception of the Stoneforge Mystic. Those are kind of cute. The Heavy Metal is kind of cute. This deck is not cute. This deck's the opposite of cute. It's expensive. You're going to have to pull a lot of stuff from a lot of different places. But then again, you can, like, splash other colors. You can, like, make it Baneslayers. You can make it red-green stompy with Birthing Pod.
I want to transform a Thrawn into a Baneslayer and then transform that into a friggin' Wormcoil Engine.
I don't know,
just
man.
Because.
You know what else is kind of rude? I think that if you use the Birthing Pod on a 4-drop for, like, a Precursor Golem, I kind of think that you win. Like,
yeah, that's pretty good, too.
Like, I think that, like, you're sacrificing a creature, usually after it swings or does whatever it needs to do. To do what? To get 3 more creatures? Immediately, like, it's a pretty strong play. I mean, we're talking about it's a green deck. You get to sideboard in the new Reclaim, with the regrowth for free, puts on top of the deck. There's a whole bunch of cool stuff, and then you get all the same green. I think it sideboards well, actually. If I say anything else, I think it sideboards into everything. Like, it sideboards removal, green removal, and you get to mainboard,
Spellskite.
No, fuck Spellskite. We've already sucked
no.
this deck.
Never fuck Spellskite.
What if I ask nicely? Take it to a fancy dinner. Anyway.
Wow, that works too.
What about, Beast Within? Beast Within! You get to run Beast Within!
Well, of course. Beast Within's amazing.
And then, like, please remember, Beast Within is really good, because you can Beast Within your own stuff and make a 3-3. When you're playing green, so you're probably going to be accelerated. So you can just be like, you know what? My Lotus Cobra just doesn't quite make it anymore. But now it's a 3-3! Instant speed. That's going to swing next turn. You can run Garrick. I think you run Garrick. I think you run only 2 Garricks.
No.
I don't get tired of Garrick. Like,
no,
I play him...
He's really good.
You know, like, he wins games or he's fucking useless. That's the rule of Garrick.
He's never really useless.
He's always...
I mean,
yeah, because if you get a Garrick...
He untaps your lands. He makes blockers for you.
You need... Yeah.
He needs supporters. He needs other creatures.
Well, I love Garrick against red. Because it's just... They just cry.
That it is... Garrick is... An anti-red card at its best.
It, because technically they get the one up on you with like a Searing Blaze. They're like, "Hi, I kill your beast and your Garrick." And I'm like, "Yeah, I understand that very well, but that was 3 less damage I took, and if you're a red mage, you're probably wanting to kill me more than the beast."
Yeah.
So
you want to outrace it.
Yeah. The last thing I want to talk about, and apparently I'm the only one who wants to talk about this, is the existence of Infect on a whole. Blue-Black Infect. If you played it before, play it now. You got cooler cards. It seems to work better. Elves is now an Infect deck, because what is the...
The Glistener Elf?
Oh, they just... No. Well, yes, you get a Glistener Elf, but what's the card that gives them Overrun and Infect?
Oh, Triumph of the Hordes, I think it is.
Yeah, you get Infect Overrun now, so you just run your normal Elf deck.
Trample Infect. It's like, okay.
Yeah, which is basically exactly what I said. It's good. So you run elves and you don't draw Z Monument anymore. So this makes elves viable past the rotation because you don't really lose. You lose Arbor Elf and you lose Jiraga Tree Speaker, but I'm sure we're gonna get. You get like Glistener Elf. Okay. You get.
And
you still have Copperhorn
Scout. Of course, sets right around the corner. There's always gonna be elves.
We're gonna see Elvish Archdruid again.
Yeah.
So your elf deck is still gonna be fine. You can run like Infect Elves and then you can like swap out and then you can run like Malira against Infect. You just get like these cool. You still get the Fauna Shaman effects for Tajiro Preserver. Tajiro Preserver is great because it shuts Karn down. No, it doesn't. I'm sorry. I'm thinking All is Dust.
You lie.
We don't need to run All is Dust anymore. We have Karn.
Karn is potentially a better All is Dust.
But the deck in particular I want to talk about is All Infect. Ah, it's a pun. And I said it, Kirk. So I owe you a nickel for I stole a pun from you.
Nickel to the pun jar.
Yeah, there should be. It should be a punishment. Two in a row!
Got it!
Anyway, the way the deck works, it's evolved only about Glistener Elf. And
as the only creature.
It's like the only creature. Like, you can run, you know, like a Necropede or something, I guess, if you really want to. But it's all about, like, dump one drop Glistener Elf, and then every green and black and red pump spell that you can get your hands on. I mean, you can be like Groundswell Assault Strove. Yeah, it's a one-shot win. You can be like Vampire's Bite, Mutagenic Growth. If you're really trying to do that, I mean, I think there's a deck build somewhere on Building on a Budget on the MTG website that has it's Building on a Budget, so it's a very poor man's version of the way the deck can work. The deck can work a lot faster if you get to add, like, black into the deck. Because you can run, like, Verdant Catacombs. You can get your hands on Vampire's Bites. You can get your hands on Spot Removal in the sideboard and, like, Surgical Extractions and Memoricides. And you can give it Vines of the Vastwood to make sure it doesn't die. You can kind of shift the focus of the way the deck works. Yeah. You get to run, like, basically it's like a Jund Infect build. It's possible. You can run, like, just Mono Green. You can run Green Black. But it's all based around this one creature because it's a 1/1 infector, and that's pretty much the best infector that's ever been made for its cost. It's the most cost effective.
Well, I still think my preference for an infect deck is blue black control with Skithrix. I mean,
Skithrix and Phyrexian Crusader.
Yeah,
don't lie.
You don't need the Phyrexian Crusader.
Don't ever lie. He just can't die.
Oh, sure he can.
How?
Get his throat cut.
First of all, let me just clarify something. This all-in infect deck, it's bad. Don't play it. Use it for kindling in your fireplace, or throw it in your garbage.
No, it's, you know what though. You're gonna get enough. You're gonna get enough shock value wins. Yeah. Like, you really are. You're gonna get enough. Like,
I can see someone win.
Dies to bolt. Dies to removal. It doesn't matter. Dies to removal. It does. It dies to removal. So you know what?
Dies to
you have to. Nowadays. You just have to prepare for that.
Run Spellskite.
If you're running infect, yeah, run Spellskite. Put Spellskite. Why not? Whatever. Spellskite. Like, you get to be like, I still... Like, all it is getting... You don't have to play it immediately. You don't have to be like, turn one that. You can do some crazy stuff with it. It's... You don't really need to worry, though. If they're running red, you're already going to have a bad matchup.
You're going to lose. If you're playing me, you're going to lose. The only real awe that's going to be is when I beat your face in. That's pretty much going to be it.
Is that a threat?
On that note, ladies and gentlemen, I will be building that deck today.
Just to beat Kirk with
me. And next podcast, we will be discussing the epic match. We're going to do a best of five, no sideboard, against Kirk's, what deck? The Grixis?
Grixis.
Do Grixis Splinter Twin?
Splinter Twin versus
Listener Elf.
Alright, we're gonna I'm gonna build a version of the deck, and I'm gonna face him off 5 times, and we're gonna see who ends up on top of that.
You think you're gonna beat him?
It's not best best 3 out of 5. We're doing 5 matches.
Why don't you guys make like a prop bet with this or something?
No.
A prop bet. Alright, Kirk. I got a bet for you.
Okay.
If I win,
okay,
you have
yep.
to dedicate a page in your rare binder to Elish Norn. You must never trade her, and you must make all fair trades when possible if someone offers her to you.
Okay.
Until you have 9 Elish Norns.
Okay.
Okay. What would you like from me?
Okay, at the next PTQ or Star City event, or, you know, whichever
big event,
you will have to run a Quest White Weenie deck.
Now, is that Quest with the Pure Steel, or
no,
without it?
No, we're not.
Alright, so I can at least run a Quest that might win.
No, you're not gonna win.
Or you could just make him run the Glistener Elf deck at the PTQ.
oh, that'll be even better.
Is that what it is?
That's what it is.
Alright, I'll take that deal. I still feel... You know what, though? That's fair, because you have to do everything in your power to get Elish Norns.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be like, I need him, I'll give you money for them. Because if I'm going to waste $25 in the PTQ, you're going to waste $25 on Elish Norns.
Alright.
If you see a foil one, you have to have it immediately.
Yep.
If the entire page isn't surrounded, at least by one in the middle, you fail. So, that's the final bet.
I will stick to my guns.
Alright, Glistener Elf, happening.
Alright, so you're on all an infect if you lose at the next PTQ or big event we go to, and you're going to get a page of Elish Norns.
Yeah.
Oh, this is going to be great.
Yeah, this is not going to be great at all. I just built Pyro Twin. Anyway, Alright, so I think we're covered on decks you should be running and decks you shouldn't be. And the reason why it's so important that we talk about this now is because this weekend, I believe the 15th...
Yeah, the 15th.
...is going to be the first PTQ of the PTQ season, on the East Coast anyway. It's going to be in Philadelphia. New Phyrexia will be out. Get ready for it. You know, build your decks and everything like that. Now, I personally, I don't like going to the first PTQ of a season. I know a lot of people do because they like that shock factor. Like, they might be able to run a rogue deck that no one saw, like a red-green land destruction deck, or some kind of mono-blue, or even, like, Grand Architect with something that we haven't even seen yet. There's a lot of different
options. I still want to see Grand
Architect. Oh, wow, Grand Architect puts a Mir Superion out immediately.
Wow, it does.
Wow, I didn't even think of that. Grand Architect is awesome now, people. You get Mir Superion. Wow. Anyway.
Ubermir,
that's true. It is Ubermir. I don't like to play them because I really don't like to waste, like, $25 or $30 to play a deck that I just started practicing, or I haven't gotten enough true testing against, and I don't know enough of the meta. I usually go to, like, the second through every other one in the tri-state area and sometimes Boston. But 15th is one. I believe there's a couple of others around the country over the next couple of days. A couple weeks.
Yeah, well, I'm planning on going.
Well, yeah, we're going.
RTFC will represent.
We will represent. We will be there. If anything, I'll just try to do like a draft for a box or something during the process. But I want to see. We're going to have a deck report. Next week is going to be deck list reports. We're going to talk about how the tournament went. We're going to do a full tournament report. We're going to be spying on people throughout the course of the game. We're going to be making people very uncomfortable. If I happen to come across extra money, or if in my somehow case I pull enough to build something stupid good, or if I feel like I have money to waste, we'll all play, we'll all give you our experiences personal, and we're guaranteed we're going to tell you what decks won, why they won, if they won for a good reason, if they won because of shock value, and if they're going to stay around.
We will also give you the results of the previous prop bet.
Yeah. Elish Norns. We're going to get a whole bunch at the PTQ, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, it's going to be Elish Norns all over the place, man.
Alright, everybody, so we're going to close this up now. Thank you for listening. We're going to make this a little shorter than last week's, obviously. As always, broadcasting from Kirk's basement, I'm Tony.
This is Kirk.
And I'm Phil.
And please, for the love of God, read the fucking card.